Hello, hello. You're listening to another episode of Inside the Tech Ecosystem. I'm your host, David Chuka, and I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Emmanuel Awotunde. I said your full name now, please.
Nah, it's fine. It's fine. I like the fact that you added wonderful co-host. You know, the other times you just say something like this guy, that guy. So
I've missed you, man. How have you been?
I've been actually very great. It's been nice actually. I don't want to get into the details, so
okay. You hit me up later. Now. That's fine.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've not been here in a while. When last did we record? Feels like it's been a while. But we're here now, and we have a very interesting guest today. And by very interesting, I'm guessing you guys are going to find out soon. And we also have a very, very, very interesting topic today. One where we have not, hasn't been explored as much. So we're hoping we're going to, you know, explore it a lot on today's episode. I'd just like to introduce the guest first. Hey, Laulu, what's good, man?
Hi, David. Thanks for having me on the show. Hope you guys are great. Hi, Emmanuel.
Hey.
Yeah. So, fun fact, we have two Olaolus today. So, Olaolu number one. Emmanuel, you're Olaolu number two today.
Of course. I'll take the L.
We're going to have Olaolu number one introduce himself and, you know, just tell us a little bit about what he does. And we're just going to kick it over there. So, Olaolu, stage is yours. What's up? Introduce yourself to us.
Yeah, hi everyone. Olaolu number one, and I'm a technology consultant at a Big Four, focused specifically on robotic process automation, short form RPA. RPA is really software technology that mimics human behavior on digital systems, and I've been doing that for about 4 years now. And it's been really exciting to see the rate of adoption grow. It's been really exciting to see people get, you know, really interested in the technology. And being a consultant has really allowed me to make a lot of impact in the market space. So that's me, and that's what I do.
That's an interesting intro. Like I said, interesting person, interesting episode. So I don't know if you guys heard this, but Olaolu basically does is into RPA development, right? And for people like me, you may not have heard RPA, like, you know, as a word being thrown around all the time, right? And that's why we have this episode. This is actually part of our Inside the Mind series, where we interview professionals in the field and ask them different questions about the field, and you know, just have a conversation about all the cool stuff they're working on, right? And I personally like Inside the Mind. I like episodes from the Inside the Mind series because it opens my mind a lot. Like, I get to learn a whole lot. Really, like, I'm serious. Like,
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. It's like. I know. It's I'm a host on the podcast, right? But mm-hmm. I'm also like a guest. I'm like a listener mm-hmm. on the podcast. I can Definitely. Go back to any Inside the Mind episode and I can listen to it. I'm like, oh, wow, maybe I would even check out this career path. Looks like this is what is making bank right now.
Yeah. I get that.
Yeah.
You get to listen on the conversations first.
Exactly. And that's really interesting for me, right? So, Laulu, we are going to start with a very, you know, commonplace question. I'm very sure you get this a lot, maybe on the numerous podcasts you have been on. I know you're a star boy. I know. You don't have to tell me.
It's fine.
I mean, just, you know, it's common knowledge. If nobody knows who is on the podcast, we'll put your Twitter handle.
I'm screaming.
All right, so the question we usually get started with whenever we have a guest is, you know, how did you get into tech? So you basically just tell us about your career progression. You know, what was that one thing that said, I think I want to do this for a long time or a long period in my life, right? So how did you get into tech? And, You know, what's the story like?
That's a very interesting question. And I think the part I like the most is you saying, how did I decide I want to do this for a long time? Because for a lot of things we do in life, you know, you really do have to wait it out or see it through to reap maximum benefits from whatever you're doing, all right? I do have a background in computer science. So I studied computer science, graduated sometime in 2016. And really, you know, with the Nigerian situation of keeping 1 year of your life to do other things, you know, naturally, I didn't enter the labor market until 2018. And my first job was really a traditional IT support role at a small, in terms of numbers of employees, financial services company. It was non-banking, meaning that it wasn't a bank, but then it did financial services. And in that company, you know, I really got tired of going under the desk to plug cables and carrying laptops. Because I know, yes, you can't see that on the podcast, but I mean, David and I have met and have quite small, right?
Oh, no. This is a free flow podcast. You can say whatever you want, you know.
Yeah. So, David knows that part of the story. And for me, you know, that stressed me out a lot. And I was very lucky at the time to be asked by the CFO, the chief financial officer at the company, to do a process review for a particular department. So it was basically just him saying, go sit down with the guys, the business guys, and understand what they're doing, right? They have business operations they do every day on computers. I want to know more about what they're doing. And I did that. I sat with them for a few days, and I saw that, you know, a lot of the stuff they did was high volume, monotonous, repetitive, rule based. And you know, so as someone that studied computer science, when you see all those things, you start to think, hey, I can do this with software, right? And that's really where that thing started off. And for me, after I discovered that, I had to go through the phase of deciding how I was going to build the solution for them, what I was going to do, making them see the potential value of what automating that process could look like. And the first step of that thing was to build like a minimum viable product. And the minimum viable product was a Python console app.
Oh, wow.
And the Python console app, the Python console app just basically took a link to the Excel file that they were processing. Right, so they used to get Excel files from their clients, and they had to process those Excel files into multiple different versions for different payment systems, for different in-house record-keeping systems. And that really did weigh down a lot of the employees, because they had to do that for hours on end, and you know, they looked drained and tired. So after getting that minimum viable product, I showed them that, okay, this is the inputs, right? So after understanding the process, defining the inputs, the outputs, the business logic in between, I was able to do that, show them the value, and they were like, hey, we're interested in this, right? And at that point, what that meant was I had interest in what I was building, right? There was buy-in from the stakeholders, and it was now on to me to bring this up to a bigger, better level, right? Because a console application is not something that you give business users to use. If I left the solution as a console application, what I would have meant in the end is that they would be coming to me each time, right, for when they want to run those files. And really, that's what a lot of traditional IT automation or IT roles back in the days were, where people learned how some of the stuffs that the business guys were doing, and then they wrote scripts that lived on their computers that did those jobs. And then that job now became their own job. And I didn't want that for myself. I'm like, it's not me that is going to now be, you'll now be coming to me every time to say, please help me run this, please help me run this.
Yeah.
And I knew that I had to empower the guys themselves to be able to do it from their computer. So the next step in that process was me deciding to make a web app, right, that was hosted locally and could serve, that could allow them upload the files and download the generated versions of the files on their computers. And, you know, it's really interesting because at the time, you know, my tool of choice was Python. And even though Python wasn't a part of my university curriculum, I really like plugging this great book, Automate the Boring Stuff, by Al Swigert. I believe that's how you say his last name, right? That book really did show me everything. really did show me everything about, you know, really automating financial processes or processes in business. And then that led me to the Python community, engaging in the Python community, getting my employer to even pay for my attendance fee for the first conference I went for. And, you know, I really enjoyed that experience.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, after that initial first phase, I think at the beginning I just had one client's own files being processed and one payment type being processed. And obviously, for you to have impact, you need to spread that automation to the various clients and then their various payment types. So for about 8 months, I was building, you know, different versions for the different clients and then their different payment types. And some files generated, some uploaded files needed to get about 6 files generated. Some other ones had to get 4 based on business logic, right? So I really spent that time learning the processes, iterating, pushing out software to the guys and updating the versions that lived on their computer. And, you know, it really did go a long way in significantly impacting their process. And essentially, I would like to say that I literally fired myself as an IT support staff and hired myself as a developer.
Amazing. Because
first man
in history to do that, by the way. First man in history.
You get first to that. And I'm even looking to do that again very, very soon, but I'll keep that under wraps until I succeed. So yeah, I didn't need to carry cables, go under tables anymore, to plug in cables, carry computers anymore. And because it was a small company, the IT department was like basically 4 people, right? And none of them were doing software development. There was no form of leadership. I literally had to learn everything myself. There was nobody to go to apart from the internet and automate the boring stuff. But then that was really how I fell in love with automation. And then that led me to a situation where I met someone that worked at my current employer who was, you know, doing RPA. And luckily for me, we had a conversation. It was a great conversation. One thing led to another. And you know how the transfer window goes now. I'm off to Man City, so let's go. And that was really the story. That was really the story.
We actually had an episode called, I think, Tech Transfer Season.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
You should listen to it. It's actually quite interesting. You know, I'm curious, were you doing all of this yourself? Like, you know, the building the web app, creating the automation process. Were you doing, like, there was no help from anybody? You were just, you know, working hard to just, like, you know, please don't, I don't want to babysit anybody. This is what you need to do. Press this, press that, get your work done, and then you're out of there.
Yeah. So for me, I think the great thing was I was able to find somebody in that department that was really excited by the potential of what we were trying to do, and she really understood the process. That was her job day to day for many years, right?
Oh.
And that's a very key part of successfully automating stuff. You need to find people within various departments that are passionate about trying to improve the status or go past the status quo and really, you know, get more out of what they can do day to day. So she was the one that did a lot of the knowledge transfer to me, and we worked hand in hand. So anytime I needed to review something, but then I would go to her. Anytime there was an error, she would come to me. And I think at some point, you know, she started, and I know this is a software technology or a technology podcast. Typically, you shouldn't throw up, you know, uncut exceptions to your users, right? But because there was no leadership, there was no guidance, she was seeing all the error messages, right? And with time, she could read them. She could read them and understand what was going on because, you know, we had worked so close together for that period of time. So she would come to me and she'd be like, oh, you know, this thing seems like this thing is doing this thing. And then I changed something in the file and I uploaded it again and it worked, right? So it was a really, really exciting thing to see. And that really made me fall in love with that whole process and the whole journey of, you know, showing value, automating processes, and then delivering value for the clients.
So basically, you talked about, you know, automating processes and all of that, right? Which makes sense, right? This is a podcast where this episode is basically talking about, you know, RPA development and, you know, why it's important today, right? But I'm curious because you mentioned, you know, you did the Python console app thing, and then you also did the web app, right? To allow the employees to be able to do stuff themselves. But I'm curious because at this particular company, you were working as an IT support person, right? So now, did you have these skills before, the Python web app skills, like Python skills and all of that, right? Or was it something you were like, oh, I'm going to start learning so that I can do this? So were you learning on the job, or you had the skills before and then you may have used them maybe previously, maybe not professionally, right? Because you're working as an IT support person at this company. I don't think you had to write much Python. So is it like when the opportunity came, you just harnessed the skills that, it's time to write Python? You know?
So I've been waiting for this my whole life.
Exactly. You're like, I was built for this moment, man. This is my time. Or was this something that, you know, you've had previous experience with and then you just happened to be doing support at the time? Right, at the IT department.
Yeah, so for me, I did have computer science background, right? So I went through a full 4-year program and also did a final year project that, you know, I built myself using PHP. And it was an information management system. And PHP at the time was pretty decent, wasn't too difficult to understand. I got the hang of it. And I think that confidence, you know, led to me still feeling like I knew that I could do something, you know, that could be impactful. And for me as a consultant now, I think the most important thing and what I did then as well was identify the technology that allowed me implement as quick as possible and as easy as possible, right? Now, that led to Python. That road led to Python. And because of the great community, because of the fact that there was literally a book that said, automate the boring stuff. It wasn't you know, learn Python the hard way. It wasn't a... advanced.
I'm not taking shots. Because Zsho is savage and Zsho can come for you. Actually, funny story. Learn Python the Hard Way was literally my own introduction to Python. It's the first book I ever read.
Yeah.
It was my own introduction to programming, right? So, like,
and I mean, you can clearly see that you like Software Head now. That's why you wanted to do the Hard Way. I wanted to automate the boring stuff. So you see, I think something that's coming out of this is, you know, individual motivations, right? Mm-hmm. What was my motivation at the time? What was your motivation at the time? And then also the way the authors decided to name their books now resonating with different audiences, right? So it's really a storytelling or a masterclass on marketing there, but this is not a marketing conversation because I did see, you know, the name of the book and think, okay, this is what I'm looking for. And I was willing to say, let me dedicate time to going through the process. And then the great thing about technology, especially when you're learning and doing at the same time, right? You get a lot more stuff done, right? And in no time, because I was also the IT support guy, I was able to find a second monitor for myself and just put it there. And then I had one monitor.
No questions asked. Nobody's going to ask you anything. I'm the IT guy.
No questions asked. And then I just assigned myself the second monitor. There was no need for approvals. There was no need for anything. I was just like, it's mine now. And I really did get a lot of enjoyment from that role. But then, you know, sometimes things come along, better opportunities come along, and you're just like, I think it's time I go, right? And the thing about technology as well is that no technology stays installed or or in production forever, right? Technology advancements could come, they could find another approach, take another approach to solving that particular problem, and your skill might no longer be needed, right? So maybe if I had stayed there for longer, my app would have been deprecated or they would have thrown it away, and then I would have been back to carrying computers on my head, right? So yeah, I think
you would return
out,
the external monitor that you carried. You return it.
So yeah, I think it all worked out well. And so and then I would like to transition to going into the new role, right? And interviewing for the new role, I was told that, yeah, I know you've done Python, but really what we do in RPA as at that time was, or the tools they used, was basically .NET heavy, right? So it was C# and VB, right? And I would give a bit more context into RPA solutions and RPA tools. What they really
definitely.
Do, yeah. So what RPA tools on the market or RPA vendors do is give you pre-built GUI, drag and drop activities, or that's what most of the newer guys do, right? So that you can speed up your development, right? So if you wanted to write a, typically, if you wanted to automate something that had to do with reading a CSV file, you'd have to write code for reading your CSV file, right? But then if it's a GUI drag and drop element, you just drag and drop and you're done. So what that invariably meant was that I was able to automate work faster. And that also meant that things that I would have typically done in 8 months with traditional software programming, I can do it a lot faster. I think a lot of times when I talk to developers about RPA, that's really where the value is. I'm telling you that, yes, you can, you know, talk to an API without writing any code. You can insert things into a DB without any code. You're just doing drag and drop. And then once you understand how technology works, how everything ties in together with the process, it's literally like drawing flowcharts and placing things here and there. But then you could still use code in inside. And that's why they still mentioned that, oh, it was C# based, it was, you know, VB based. And now there are a lot more tools on the market that are JavaScript based for people that are, you know, more drawn to that type of stuff as well. So the industry is growing. Last I checked, the industry was projected to reach about $25 billion by 2025, I believe, or 2030. So it's really, really growing quickly, and yeah, there's a lot to gain here.
That's actually interesting.
That's interesting. Yo, Laulu, you know your stuff, like.
I mean, would you call me on the podcast to not know my stuff?
I mean.
You think I'm coming here unprepared?
I love it, man. I love it. You are way more prepared than us. You know, he knows his stuff, facts and figures. You know, you can go head to head with anybody. You know, I love it.
Don't quote me though. Do your own research. I'll be killer queen.
That's what they say on Twitter. Do your own research. I mean, enlighten yourself.
So, like, there's a very funny question I'm about to ask. You talked about RPA, obviously. RPA is robotic process automation. Do you know that, like, all my life, I've always thought, like, when you say robotic process, I always thought it was actual robots, like physical robots. So, when people tell me they are into RPA, I was like, maybe, like, industrial stuff, you know, machines moving around. Yeah. I feel so dumb right now, knowing that RPA is simply automating anything, basically, which is actually, I mean, it's better because it's software, right? So
I think a lot of people do have that you know, initial misconception where they find out about it, and it makes it seem really scary when you hear that your employer wants to implement robotic process automation, and then a lot of people start saying, "Oh, am I losing my job?" You know, is that what it is? Because I mean, you now have a robot that can walk and talk. But in, I think for RPA, to really carve out a niche for what we were doing and the kind of technology that the vendors and the people in the industry wanted to sell, they needed to, you know, find a way to package it again. I'm going back to marketing, right? So talking about how different the technology is, putting a different nomenclature around it, you know, so that everybody knows that, okay, when you say this term, this is what you're referring to. You find a name that is also, that also energizes people, right? So when you say, you know, we're using bots, we have about 10,000 bots in production. It's not 10,000 physical bots walking up and down doing stuff.
Emmanuel, you know, knows that 10,000,
now. Yeah. So it's 10,000 bot licenses, bot software licenses that you've deployed that can do different tasks for you. So that's pretty much it.
So, so RPA is not necessarily technology. It's like, it's not a language, right? It can be done in any language, right? Because you mentioned you can use Python, you can use other languages, right?
Yeah. So RPA is not a language. It's a, I'll say it's a software development methodology. Would you say methodology or technique? You know, that kind of abstracts a lot of stuff that you would have typically had to write code for, and then also gives you that license or that user bot account that you can now give that task to run on the system. So it's like having a virtual agent on your computer that is constantly running jobs, like on a system that is constantly running jobs.
Okay, so like, I mean, so compare that to like product-facing technologies. So for instance, there are people who build software for consumers, and then, so RPA is mostly for businesses, right?
Yes, mostly for businesses, but then everyday people can use it because I mean, I've automated creating a playlist on Spotify, right? And that automation lives on my computer. And anytime I need a playlist on Spotify for a particular artist, right, I could just type the person's name and then the bot takes over my system and then goes to genius.com, searches for, you know, the artist's discography, and then it puts all of it in a Spotify playlist, and I have all the music from that.
Amazing.
On that's, Spotify,
That's very interesting.
So when you do, so like, that means you use RPA personally for your own, like, personal project or like to automate things for yourself. So do you always deploy, like, do you always have them like online, or do you have like a lot of web developers, for instance, we have projects on our laptops. We keep them like on local host and stuff, so we never really deploy. Guessing you might have to deploy some of these things so that it is truly automated, so that you don't have to run commands every time.
Yeah. And let me get a bit deeper into that. With RPA, there are two ways to go about it, two ways to think about the bots and how they work, right? So think of them as maybe operating models or how the robots operate. And what that means in essence is that some robots are attended automations and some are unattended automations. So think of the attended automations as automations that live on your computer and run on your computer, right? Mm. Those ones, you can kickstart it yourself. So like the Spotify one I just said was an attended automation. So I started myself and then takes over my computer and it runs. Now, the other half side of it are the unattended robots. Now, those unattended robots, just like you've perfectly said, have a digital, like they just have their own virtual machine or a physical box somewhere that they run on, right? And they do the jobs there. So think of it as like a backend server that runs processes. So for instance, I do have a bot that I could leave currently on, as long as it's deployed on a virtual machine somewhere hosted, and the bot has triggers that work, and when it triggers, it starts and it does its jobs. So yeah, that's really what it is in terms of how it is in production or how you use it as a final user. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. So I have one more question for you. Sorry. You mentioned like you have like maybe companies that also develop like RPA kind of technologies. Let's say like a marketplace where you can go download some GUI or drag and drop stuff. So those companies, for instance, and those products, are they like services that live online, or you download them and then like you like modify it to your own, let's say your own use case?
Yeah. So I would explain this a bit and think of the RPA tools as, because this is a traditional software talk, right? I would use IDEs, right? Think of them as IDEs, right? Development environments. Okay. Now a company makes a development environment for a particular for their RPA products, and what you do is you go to their website and you download it, right? So some guys use physical downloads where you download it to your computer, and then you now have that development environment that allows you drag and drop, you know, install packages, and then build out your automations that match the process that you're trying to achieve. Now, there are some other companies that have taken a different approach to it where, you know, everything runs in your browser. So you drag and drop on your browser. So think of, you know, I don't know if you know IFTT, if this, then that, that you can, you know, click, create triggers based on activities, stuff like that. That's pretty much right now how those softwares are typically. And the interesting thing about that is, you know, for a very long time, big tech companies ignored that category, which was the RPA category. And that really allowed other people that were super early, super focused, capture the large share of the market, right? So the number one RPA tool is not from Google, it's not from Microsoft, it's not from Facebook, right? But we've seen now that those guys too have started to make significant RPA investments. So Microsoft, for instance, have bought a bunch of RPA companies to kind of build in those capacities, because Microsoft is huge and they never want to ignore a technology category that is on the rise, because they have a massive footprint in the digital ecosystem. And so for businesses that are already using Microsoft products, think about all the jobs that people do on Microsoft tools every day, right? How many of them can you automate? Either through one way, maybe API integration. So let's assume Excel has APIs. You can use that. So they've done that with their Power Automate platform. And there's a version of that called Power Automate Cloud Flows. Now, those Cloud Flows are using API integrations for Microsoft products and other products that can be integrated via APIs. But then they now have a second product called Power Automate Desktop. And that is the version of, you know, the solution that lives on your computer and can automate, you know, even the oldest banking application that was in human history that some banks still use, or, you know, trying to work on some really, really complex things that API automation cannot achieve. So that really goes a long way to enabling a lot of companies automate and, you know, really set them on the journey of being more nimble, being more digital, and achieving a lot more efficiency. So that's pretty much it.
So who are the biggest players like in this space?
Yeah. The biggest players in the space right now are, I would say number one is UiPath, right? A software company that started out in Romania, which is very interesting, right? A very small country. And it's grown and it's now on the stock market. It's publicly traded. And, you know, that tells you a lot about...
I think I've heard of UiPath.
Yeah. I mean, if you haven't, then they are doing something wrong.
Well, I haven't.
Of course, you know, haven't.
drag him.
So, I mean, he came here thinking we're going to talk about robots. So, I mean, just look at him.
No, it's good to have a simple mind, you know. Like, you get to learn more stuff.
I do agree. And yeah, so I'd say that those guys are clearly the leaders in the space. They've captured a massive chunk of the market. But then something very interesting was when I started out my career in 2019, that wasn't the case. Sorry, in 2019, that's correct. In 2019, that wasn't the case. They weren't the leaders. There was another software company that was very, very popular for unattended robots, meaning that, you know, again, they live on backend systems, they had their own computers they could work on. And a lot of banks, a lot of insurance companies, a lot of telcos that had backend processes just implemented that. But then, you know, with the world we live in today and with companies that are really, really focused on product development and making their products a lot more quick and better, UiPath was able to surpass them by integrating more into more things into their solution. You know, rather than just RPA alone, they created like a whole suite that serves you different products that are very, very critical to the automation journey. And RPA is just one part of it. There are other parts story.
That's amazing. That's, like the other time you said Microsoft just bought a bunch of companies. I mean, it's only a few companies can do that. Like,
yes,
bought a bunch of RPA companies.
Yeah. So what Microsoft did was they bought a bunch of different companies that, you know, one was RPA, one was another intelligent automation offering, and then they're now tying everything into, just like UiPath has, their own suite of intelligent automation. So intelligent automation is like the bigger brackets, and then RPA is like a smaller circle inside of it.
So
I know about data science. Like how in data science we do something called ETL, extract, transform, and load. And I know there's a bit of automation that goes on there. Have you in your career ever worked with like maybe large amount of data or working with something that is similar to data science, maybe RPA tools like helping out in data science also?
Or artificial intelligence even? Because I feel like, you were working at the IT support thing, you did your own basic form of robotic process automation. Like you just said, okay, let me just automate this. And you just, but in my mind, I'm like, I think the big players out there, right, when they're about to do their own RPA, they bring like their data guys, their AI guys, and like, yo, we're about to, you know, RPA the hell out of this thing. So so I was wondering if you know, right now, I know you're doing consultation, right? You're consulting and stuff. I want to know if at your company, maybe you guys also take into consideration, you know, adding some form of AI and ML and all of that into your process.
Yeah, so I'll tie everything back to, you know, the last point I made about intelligent automation, right? So in intelligent automation, RPA, again, like I said, is just a subset. Now, in that same circle, you have ML, you have AI, you have process intelligence, which is really using artificial intelligence to figure out processes based on digital logs. So for instance, an application has logs, you go through all the logs digitally, intelligently, and then you pretty much create flows and, you know, allow people to see what is happening in the backend systems that generated all those logs. And so it's a really, really huge, you know, think of it, I don't want to call it a metaverse, but it's like a huge, it's a huge ecosystem of different technologies that have come together to make RPA a lot more reliable and allow it do more, right? So go beyond just the basic rules that RPA started out as. And that has meant that for companies really thinking about taking automation to the next level, you really do have to start thinking of your AI strategy. You really start thinking of, you know, data strategy as well, because all those things tie in together, right? So for instance, if you think about common businesses that might need a service like this, they're typically big. They typically have a lot of employees, because when you hear a company has a lot of employees, what comes to your mind should be they have a lot of processes, because if you didn't have a lot of processes, you wouldn't need a lot of people, right? So you have a lot of people, and then you also have a lot of customers. And those customers, at the end of the day, every single touch point leaves a digital footprint in a company that has significant technology investments. So for banks, for telcos, for government agencies, you can see the number of records skyrocketing, you know, into the millions, right? And based on the business logics, just like I said at the beginning, where one file came in as just one file, but you had to generate six files, right? You could have a system where one entry in one system needs to translate into three entries in another system. And that really does mean that there's a lot of heavy lifting there. So maybe not right now, as of today in Nigeria, in this space, right? So maybe not data science yet, more of data engineering, right?
Okay.
Where ETL, okay, just like you said, comes in. I have worked with a couple of ETL tools to help out with cases where we come across really, really bad data sets that we needed to do a lot of transformation on. So that as well. And then for the AI and machine learning part of it, I would say yes, a lot of the machine learning professionals are more geared towards, you know, software development, adding intelligence to products, and, you know, using artificial intelligence for good and human development. But then for a lot of the companies here locally, a bit of context, we're in Nigeria, right?
Yeah.
for your global audience that is listening in, a lot of the maturity around those processes and the need for intelligence hasn't gotten to where we need it to be. And so it means that there's still a second wave coming. The RPA is right now. That's the pandemic kind of wave. But yeah, it's a second wave. The first wave was RPA. The second wave would be, you know, intelligent automation, where artificial intelligence, machine learning, optical character recognition are all brought in to significantly improve the processes and take them off people that really, really hated them in the first place.
I am very curious. I am very curious. This, in fact, like, I'm sold right now. Like, this is actually very interesting stuff. And on this podcast, we like to relate almost everything we talk about to the tech ecosystem. I mean, it's called Inside the Tech Ecosystem for a reason. And our tech ecosystem right now is Nigeria, right? And I'm going to be very honest. Lalu, you're the first RPA person I know. So I like to know why there's not a lot of hype around it in Nigeria, in the Nigerian tech ecosystem. Like, why are we not like saying, oh, you know, I want to get into software development, or I want to get into tech, and someone just says, oh, look, why not check out RPA? I'm very sure you could have a lot of impact in different industries. So why do you think there's not a lot of hype around it right now as a tech ecosystem, you know, coming up?
And I think the very simple answer to that question is it's currently being used in business, right? By businesses that have processes for them, internal processes, that they can't talk about, right?
Okay.
Because if you talk about the process, you might be giving away some confidential information, right?
Yeah.
So the people benefiting most from it are not coming out every day to say, oh, we are using RPA, right? But then I think there was a point where it did happen, and that was as far back as 2018, where, you know, a particular company decided to do some PR runs around some of the digitizations that they were able to do with RPA. And that led to a snowball effect of other people being interested, other people finding out how they could do the same thing within their organizations. And again, because I said, you know, it's for businesses, typically what happens is somebody decides they want to do an RPA initiative. They're calling, you know, RPA consultants to, you know, help them start off the process. And typically what now happens there is, because yes, RPA is somewhat of has related skills to software development, right?
Yeah.
What happens is those consultants coming there, and the companies would now say, okay, you were working as a software developer before. Yeah, go and join them. Go and see RPA, right? Mm. So these people they've seen both sides of the story. And then some people decide, okay, I think I want to do RPA. I think this is where I want to go. And then, you know, it's still within their ecosystem, right? That whole career transition has happened. It's still within their ecosystem. They haven't gone out to give a talk about how they transitioned to RPA, right?
Wow.
Because lucky shade.
Lalu is coming for everybody.
Zero shade.
All I have to say is I have no involvement in this. I'm so sorry. Train bullets left and right. I do not know what's happening.
So it's not as glamorous as, you know, a lot of the other. So that's why it doesn't have the hype. But I'll tell you that one thing it does have is the impact, right? And I'll tell you from a people's perspective, and this is something very important, I think everybody should listen into this part, right? When people or companies decide to embark on RPA journeys, the employees that take time out to understand why they're doing RPA, the how of doing RPA, they really do get to see a very, very huge growth in their career, right? Now, I'll give you two examples. First example is someone that I met as a business user, just like in my first job where we had business users that I had to interact with, right?
Okay.
They started out there. They got really close to the project. They understood a lot of things that was happening there. And then they were able to transition into a situation where they became a business analyst. Now, no longer at their desk job, but now interfacing between the people building the RPA solutions and their former colleagues, trying to understand the process, trying to tell them, okay, we can automate this one, right? So that significantly improves that.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. That makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Yeah. That significantly improves the person's potential. And then for people that were traditionally developers, especially in Nigerian banks, that transitioned to becoming RPA developers, the fact that they got that interest, they built this skill, and again, it's a very small industry. How many banks do you have in Nigeria, right? So the trend I saw in that space was, they started doing pass around, right? You work here for 1 year, you go to another place, go to another place, collect salary increase, right? So that multiplier effect has really skyrocketed earnings of a lot of people. And I think maybe there's some vested interest in keeping it niche, right? And not opening it up as much to ensure that, you know, the people that have these skills can make the maximum benefit. Maybe that's why people don't talk about it. But I think that's really the opposite of what we should be doing, right? We should be evangelizing. We should be having communities. We do have communities. That's not shade. That's something that software development community
sounds like really shade, well. Sha. Sounds like shade.
Shade. Evangelizing,
it's not.
Man.
Don't mind the mano. Don't mind the mano.
So we do have communities in Nigeria as well for those different RPA vendors, right?
Okay.
And, you know, things are getting really, really big on the continent of Africa because, again, unfortunately, a lot of times Africa is, you know, slow to technology, right? So the Western world is already doing intelligent automation and here RPA is only just kicking off, right? So it means that the people building skills here for RPA at this time can still catch up to the people that have been doing RPA for the past 5 years, right?
Yeah.
And then they'll be stuck in that job. So they can come in, break the ceiling, and still match those people, you know, reduce the number of passing around that is going on. But then for people that have been in this space for quite a while, they need to go past that initial phase of just RPA and put something else on top of it. So maybe you're now doing intelligent automation. Maybe you've grown significantly in your career and you've taken on more important work like managing projects, you know, becoming a key stakeholder, you know, climbing the career ladder within your organization thanks to the impact you were able to make with RPA. Because I know it's not something we've touched on yet, but then the return on investments for a lot of companies that invest in the technology is huge, right? So a lot of the people there have said, so imagine coming to your boss and saying, hey, see, all the things I've done in the past year have saved the company XYZ billion, right? Why am I not getting a salary raise, right?
Yeah. That's a valid argument.
It's a much easier conversation to make. And then, So that really helped a lot of people as well in that space, and it's exciting to see.
So from the way I see it, it seems like RPA can also be used internally by a company that makes RPA technologies.
Definitely.
That is a very, very good one you've pointed out there, Emmanuel. I think, you know, for companies that sell technology, I've always felt like you using your product yourself, apart from companies that are B2C, apart from companies that are B2C, using your own product is very important because it allows you to test the extent to which the technology you yourself are building can go. And UiPath, which again, like I said, is the leader in the space, actually do have their own teams within their own company automating, you know, stuff, right? So for instance, my own company as well, we could have another team within my company automating things or things in my company, because my company has operations that I need to run, and RPA2 can come in there as well. So you really do need to taste your own pudding before you give it to someone else to eat.
Yeah.
Word.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So I'm curious about, you know, you mentioned that like you're an RPA consultant, right? And you also talk about RPA developers. So is it are they like two different things? Does consultation also involve you doing developing work, like maybe writing RPA code, I'm going to assume, right? Or consultation is just, you know, you go to a business and you try and figure out if they really need RPA, or, you know, just try and understand their needs. So, you know, if are they different things entirely, or are they just words that can be used interchangeably? And what's like the day in the life of an RPA developer or an RPA consultant when you think about it?
Okay. That's very interesting. I'm really excited for this one. So RPA consultants are traditionally, again, technology consulting, or consulting just means you understand something, somebody doesn't understand it, and they're willing to pay you for that service, right?
Sounds depending like a sweet deal.
It does. I mean, you remember all those people saying that information is power? It really is. That's what consulting is. That's really what it's built on, right?
Exactly.
So what now happens in that instance is, it really depends on the client you go to and the skills the clients have within their organization. If the client is lacking, you know, they don't understand what RPA is, they don't even know where to start. And at that point, you could start off there. That's where you can start, right? If they decide, okay, we need developers, well, I also happen to know how to build RPA technology, you can call me an RPA developer. Yeah, send me money. No problem, right? That's really what technology consulting. And I know David probably loves that part of it. I'm sure his eyes are lighting up.
Bro, I mean, it's only natural. I mean, I'm an Igbo boy. But go on. That's besides the point.
And then, you know, what now happens is, for an RPA consultant, you know, you could fit into any any aspect or segment of the life cycle of the job. But then you could also go further to specialize. You could say you're an RPA business analyst. You could say you're an RPA project manager. You could say you're an RPA developer. You can say you're an RPA senior developer. You can say you're an RPA support engineer. You can say you're... So there are so many roles, right? So RPA is not just one thing, and it's not just tied to one role. There's so many roles underneath the garment of people and people are building skills to hit those roles. And then for a day in the life of an RPA developer, is very, very similar to the day in the life of a software developer, where you have things you're trying to build to achieve a business goal, right? Maybe you have it, you know, listed out in an Excel sheet. Maybe you have it listed out on a Kanban board or something like that, right? And you have those different tasks broken down into, you know, chunk size actions that you need to tick off. And then you take your RPA tool of choice within your organization or within your practice if you're independent, and then figure out how to solve that problem. And then once you solve that problem by building the process, as a developer, typically your job is done. You've built it, you've tested it, and it's good, right? It checks out. The business logic matches. And then in some instances, you have people that are RPA testers that test it, and then you can have somebody else deploy the solution into production. So you can decide you want to have the whole view of it, or as a consultant, right, or be just a developer or a specialized role that only pertains to a particular thing. Now, the career trajectory for the two roles are different. I haven't gotten to the roles of a consultant yet, a day in the life of a consultant, but I'll get to that shortly, right? The career projection is different. So for an RPA developer, you definitely just maybe do an RPA developer 1, RPA developer 2, senior RPA developer, RPA architect. Maybe you get lucky, they think you're a good fit for leadership. They make you RPA, engineering manager, right?
Okay.
And then at the top of the chain, you now become an RPA, maybe product owner. So now you're the product owner of RPA within your organization or a technical lead. And for software developers, you can see that that is really the same. The career ladder is the same, right? Do you agree? Yeah, great.
So, sure.
For RPA consultants, a day in the life is more of interacting with business teams, trying to, you know, sell the division of RPA to leadership at the C-suite level, right? And really, really ensuring that the RPA investments or the companies make the most of their RPA investments. So it's up to an RPA consultant to, you know, ensure that his clients are at the forefront of technology, updating when things are needed to be updated, checking for latest things that could, their clients could benefit from. So on the consultation level, you're doing a lot more high-level work. You're doing a lot more visioning. You're doing a lot more roadmap direction, right? What are the plans, right? Finding people that fit into your into the ecosystem that could help you maybe build, maybe help different parts of the aspect.
Mm.
And then for that, the career projection looks like this, right? RPA consultant, one, maybe consultant, associates, RPA consultant, senior RPA consultant, right? RPA consultant, manager, right? Manager, so a manager, just like you'd have an engineering manager, but for the technical side or the delivery side. And then the thing with the consulting role is that for consultants, there's a path to C-level for you, right? Where you end up becoming, I think a lot of companies have different nomenclatures.
Becoming an organ.
But then you now become a chief automation officer, right?
Mm.
So
okay.
You become a CAO, right? And that's a C-suite position. So if you think about the sizes of companies and where people tend to hit the ceiling in terms of, you know, career trajectory, I would say that as a consultant, I think the bar is higher. There's a lot higher up you can go to within the organization. And then if you are really, really passionate about the cause, I don't think, you know, nothing stops you from transitioning from being the chief automation officer to being the CEO if you decide that, oh, he's the best man for the job. you decide that you're about to
sound like
best
cool.
It's not like they're doing like a cool.
Well, it does. I mean, I just painted that picture to show that, you know, once you hit C-suite, right, it's then left to you to decide if you still want to stay in this role where you have the executive presence, right? Another company can be an RPA company and decide, okay, we need this person as a chief executive officer rather than just a CAO, right? Because, you know, they spent time in the industry. They have, you know, strong opinions about certain things. And there's definitely a lot of direction and leadership that they can bring that just a developer or a technical lead might not be able to bring. So that's really why, you know, that's really where the difference comes in.
So it's like a product, it's like being a RPA consultant is similar to being a product manager in like product facing companies.
Yeah, it could be that. And then it could also be similar to being a program manager sometimes as well, depending on where the company is structured. So yeah.
Makes sense. So in the industry of like RPA stuff, like your own journey into RPA is not really the typical one, I guess. Is there a simple roadmap, like a way people, let's say I want to become an RPA developer today, is there a roadmap in which I need to do this, do that, maybe take a few courses, get a certification, or what's the roadmap like for RPA?
Yeah, and I'm actually curious about the certification part, because it feels like, you know, software devs now we pick a course on Udemy, you know, which will never finish, build a couple of projects, but it feels like for RPA, you need to have a certificate, because I feel like people would ask, okay, what are your certifications? Something like that, right? Because I think I recently like saw something
a lot of LinkedIn. Standards in it.
Yeah. I think I recently saw something in your LinkedIn where you got a certification for something. I'm not really sure. So is that like, is that really important? Like, no certification, no work for you, something like that.
Right? No certi.
I'm screaming. I love that. So I think this is one part where RPA needs to learn a lot more from software development. And this one is a shade, right? You wake up in the morning and you're saying 13 things on your TL, you're saying 13 things you need to learn to become a web developer in 2022. They've told you one, just 13, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Only 13, right? But then, yes, a lot more RPA developer people are also breaking into that space and, you know, sharing more. But then I would say the path is really understanding where you are, understanding your skills, right? So, Emmanuel, what's your strength? You know, David, what's your strength? Is it, you know, you're very good at programming? Is it you're a very good communicator? Is it that, you know, you have a lot of empathy? In fact, if you see the devil today, you have empathy for him, right? So, understanding where you are, right? And then just having a basic understanding of the technology and then the different roles, and seeing where you can fit in and leverage your strengths. Now, for some people, that is, you know, being an RPA developer because they're good at building, they have a good handle of, you know, programming. For some people, it's being something called an RPA citizen developer, where you're also building, but as a citizen, what citizen effectively means in this situation is that you don't have a computer science background, you don't really have a strong grasp of, you know, programming, but then RPA companies have given you a simplified version or a simpler version with, you know, a lot more, you know, simpler language. And one example, I'll go back to UiPath because it's one of my favorite tools to work with, right? So for the RPA developers and people that work in technology, if I tell you, okay, you need to save this thing into a variable, you understand instantly what I mean, right? Because it's terminology that you're used to. But then for somebody that has never heard of, that's never taken CS50, right? For somebody who has never taken CS50 and has never taken a programming course in their life, they don't know what a variable is, right? So on the citizen developer edition, what they would say is, do you want to save whatever data, you save it for later, right? And that is simple English that anybody can understand. And that's really what a variable is, right? Saving it for later. And that has really led to a lot of people, even in their 50s and in their 60s, transitioning to becoming RPA citizen developers, because then they have maybe 40 years of experience doing one particular thing. But then because of the low barrier to entry, they've been able to take on automation to do those things that they were doing before. And then what that has now led to is a lot more people getting involved, companies being able to do more, increasing the productivity of the employees, making a lot more people happier. So once you understand your strengths, you understand basics of the technology, you see where you want to fit in. The next thing is education, right? Really understanding to a deep level what you want to do. And the fantastic thing is, because these guys are publicly traded, trying to make as much cash as they can make for their investors, right? They've created really, really good academy platforms or online learning platforms that are free, right? And all the learnings are structured. So learnings are structured according to, you know, roles, right? So if you're an RPA developer, you want to be an RPA business analyst, all those things are listed according to roles. So you don't need to, you can go to Udemy for, you know, I would say alternative content, but then on their academy platform, they already have official trainings listed out, provided by the vendor themselves. And the great thing about those trainings are, and I spend a lot of time doing those trainings and even taking up trainings that I've already done before, because a lot of the knowledge there is not just tool specific, right? So it's not just UiPath, it's not just Microsoft. It's really a lot of the information there has a lot of learnings around soft skills. So you tend to find out that somebody that is very, very, you know, into RPA development and really upskilling would have a lot more soft skills than maybe their peer that is just a computer, a traditional programmer that his own is just, they're giving me a task. I'm looking at the tickets. The only person I talk to is my manager, right? And that's shade.
That one is fine.
It's fine. No, we agree.
And then that leads to, you know, ensuring that, because you need to have a lot of empathy, because you're really at the end working for people and meeting a lot of people and having massive impact in people's lives, right? It's really, really rewarding. So go get on those academy platforms. They're totally free. And then the next part is, after you're on the academy, you need to be able to access the software, right? Another fantastic thing is UiPath community is also free.
Yeah. UiPath. So the academy, do you have a can you mention a couple, like UiPath or are there others?
So UiPath has an academy. Blue Prism, which is the company I alluded to earlier that, you know, was previously the leaders, have they call theirs a university, but it's also a platform where you can learn. So just pick a tool to start out with. You don't need to fall in love with that tool on first go. My first tool is in the tool that I'm currently using at the moment, right? So things change, times change. You might need to adjust. One time somebody's leading, another person can take over, And then, you know, you need to be very, very particular about staying up to date about, you know, the trends, observing those trends, seeing where, you know, the leaders, who analysts think are the leaders in this space, because the leaders are the ones that are going to give you the most value for your money, because they're the ones that have more projects, they're the ones that would have more job openings on LinkedIn, you know, people would ask a lot more for their skills. And then if you decide to, after that, you should get certified. Right. I think the first UiPath certification that you can get, I'm sorry again, I keep going back to UiPath because I'm really, really a big fan of what they do. And I mean, try to be a very active member of the community.
That's okay. That's okay.
Right. is that, you know, I believe the first certificate you can get is an RPA developer associate. Right. And that training, I think you can take it 6 months after. 6 months into your RPA journey, right? So regardless of whether you're at a company, regardless of whether you completed the training at home, right, when you are waiting for school to be back in session, right, you can do that and then learn and then put down your CV. And then if the chance ever comes up, you meet someone, you apply to an RPA job, it does increase your chances of getting that job. So yes, certifications are important sometimes, right, because they credentialize the skills you have. But then certifications can also be used as some form of virtue signaling, right? And that is why, and I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, because it just shows that, okay, I believe that this thing is important right now. I'm investing time to learn this thing, right? And then I'm showing people out there that, hey, I'm learning this thing, right? Because I know what is coming next. I know what is happening next. And then it leads to a lot of conversations. I think for me, for instance, my professional social media, LinkedIn, is used, you know, really to stir up a lot of conversations. I love it when people come to me and say, you know, their company is thinking of starting an RPA project, right? When people come to me and say they're thinking of learning RPA. I love it when people come to me and say, you know, they're confused about picking a role that best suits them. And having those conversations, I found it very, very meaningful and I found it very engaging. So, yeah, I think that's really the whole picture.
We're going to link Laulu's professional social media and LinkedIn to this too. Because Laulu has a social media that is not professional, but we're going to link the professional one. All right. Man, this has actually been very eye-opening, enlightening to say the least. And I've learned a lot, actually. And we're so glad that we had you on this episode to talk about this. In fact, we already know that you're passionate about this because you've just been going on and on.
You can basically hear it.
Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Man, we're so glad you came on. We're so glad we came on. We've come to the end of the episode, basically, but we usually like to, you know, we start the episode with a question. How did you get into tech? And we usually like to end the episode with another question whenever.
Is it how I'm going to get out of tech?
No. You can share that wherever you want. Not on our podcast, please. Don't put us inside trouble. But the question we usually like to ask is, what would you be doing if you were not in tech? If you were never the IT support guy, if you never had to write your first Python console app, what would you be, what is your real actual, you know, a dream job, you know, or dream like, if you never had to do anything technical related?
So the thing is, I never really had a dream job, right? Or a dream career. I would say that in 2016, when I left uni, I was in a leadership type thing with a small cohort of people with a lecturer. And he was like, write down where you want to be in 5 years. And I mean, 5 years have passed, right? And I'm an RPA consultant. Who wants to guess what I wrote on the paper? Was it RPA consultant?
Of course not.
Of course not. So at the time, I wanted to be an animator. And I spent a lot of time in it. After Effects, Illustrator. And I mean, I'm not really sure if I would have had a successful career there, but then you never know.
You never know.
Yeah.
So, and then the great thing about life is you can always go back to your old interests when you have enough time. There's that as well.
Man, that's interesting. I also had animation dreams, but you know, I'm here hosting a podcast.
You still have it. I still have it.
I love it. Anyway. I'm glad you still have it.
Yeah, man, thank you so much for coming on the show. We're going to link all the, you know, things you mentioned in the show notes, and you know, and people can also reach out to Lalu on his professional social media or LinkedIn if they have more questions about, you know, RPA development and conversation. Thank you so much.
All thank right. you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Remember, we release new episodes every other Wednesday, and you can subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. If you would love to connect with us, you can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Inside the Techos, or subscribe to our newsletter and shoot us an email at InsideTheTechosystem@gmail.com. We love hearing from our listeners. You can follow the host on Twitter as well, Chuka at CYDUGU and Emmanuel at Olaluwa_98. All right, see you in the next one.